This is HPR episode 2836 entitled Interview with Wendy Hill and is part of the series Interviews. It is hosted by Anik and is about 26 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, in this episode, Anik talks with Wendy Hill about her use of open source software in her job.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and in this episode, I'm going to talk with Wendy Hill about her use of free and open source software in her job as a photographer. Let's go! Wendy Hill is a photographer, and by that, I don't mean she takes pictures of her kids on Sundays at the baseball game. Although, if she was to do that, it would probably turn out to be great pictures. No, Wendy is a professional photographer, and to run her business, she's using free and open source software. Wait, no Photoshop? No Illustrator? How's that possible? Well, let's find out. Good evening, Wendy, or good afternoon for you, actually.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good today.
So, Wendy, why don't we start by talking about what kind of photographer you are? I mean, what's the main subject of your photographies?
That's a really great question, because when most people think about photographers, they think about people photographers, which most of photography that the average person, the average studio does, I guess you would say, does people photography. But there are so many other realms of subjects. Typically dive into still life, and to break that down just a little bit more, it would be food and product is what I focus on the most.
Yeah, so nothing alive, actually, nothing moving.
Yeah, I mean, I do like taking pictures of my kids. I have four of them, but they definitely have photographer's kid syndrome. So as soon as the camera comes out, they're like, oh my gosh, Mom, go away. So I love the stuff that doesn't move, because I can spend a lot of time just focusing on the light and how it looks. And I love that intricate detail that I can add, because I've got so much time to focus on exactly what my light is doing.
Yeah, so it's kind of a sculpture. You yourself you choose how you place the different components in your picture, or do you have like guidelines and your clients want to see that? And
it really depends on the client. A lot of the clients that I'm currently shooting for, I have complete and total creative openness. Like, I can do what I want. I have a few guidelines for some of the stuff, but you'll get some jobs where you have very set guidelines. The client will come to you with a drawn picture, or, you know, an overall goal for this image, and you have to meet that. So it really depends on the type of job you're doing, but especially when I'm doing stuff for myself, I find it really relaxing, you know, have a glass of wine and play with the light and create a picture.
Yeah, it's not just a point and shoot.
Exactly.
Okay, let's start a war just right now. Are you using a Canon camera or Nikon camera?
I prefer the Nikon cameras, and I like my Nikons because of the interchangeable lenses. A lot of the glass that I use is really old, quote unquote, old Nikon glass, usually from the early 80s. And I can put it on my camera without having to have any adapters.
Yeah, so I guess you have many lenses to you know, take the picture, do your job. It's not. How many do you have, actually?
Goodness, I lost count. There's at least 12 or 13 lenses.
Wow. Yeah, that's the difference between a professional and, you know, someone like me. With I have like three lenses, and I'm pretty happy with that.
Well, you can do a lot of great things with three lenses, but I'm a fan of the prime lenses, the lenses that don't zoom in out, because I love the look that you can get with them. They have a very unique finality.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, as an amateur photographer, I'm very happy with the three I have, because I'm pretty sure I don't even use them as they are supposed to be used. But anyway, let's get back to the subject of this interview, and that's open source software in your job. What kind of software do you actually use? Can you just like go over your workflow, for example?
Yeah, there are four main programs that I use, and the first one is DisplayCal, and it has to be one of the most important programs, as it color calibrates my screens. So where I'm working with images, I'm working with colors, and you know, clients want their food and their product to be color accurate, so my displays have to be color accurate so I can adjust things properly. And that is an open source program that can be found in many of the repos, and they make it extremely easy to install from their website. The second program I use is called Rapid Photo Downloader. Oh my goodness, it is amazing. And it saves me so much time, because as I stick my SD card in, I can tell it that I want my images labeled in the folder that they're going into with a job code. So not only does that help me with a business, all of the images for a particular business I have labeled in their folder, in the month that I shot it, in the year that I shot it, which makes me able to go back and pull things if I need to redo something, or if I need to, they need something resent out to them. And then even for taking pictures of the family and events that I do personally, it makes it easier for me to go back and find those things. Yeah, there's so many ways inside that program that you can set up your folder structure and the naming structure of not only your images, but videos. So that can be individualized to exactly how you want things. And then after you download your pictures, you don't have to spend the time going through each one and sorting them out. It's done from port.
So you mean I wouldn't have to look through pictures that are called image 001, 002, and that's because that's actually what I have right now, like a bunch of files named the same, and yeah, I have to look at them all when I want to grab one. I'm gonna have to have a look at that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm so glad that I found that program, because that's how my images were at first. They were all the standard naming format, and then it's hard to go back and find what you want. And now I can be like, oh, I want the pictures of my kids from last month. And it's really easy for me to go into the folder of this year, the folder of last month, and then the folder that's called kids.
Yeah, pretty easy.
Yes, absolutely. So then there are two programs that I use for editing. The first one is Darktable, and it is an amazing raw photo editor. So in a raw photo editor, you're not making permanent changes, but you can adjust everything from white balance and sharpness, and there are incredible tools that are built into Darktable that I don't even know all of them. I mean, it is amazing the stuff that they have packed in there and is available to everybody for free.
That's an equivalent of Lightroom?
Yeah, so it would be like using Lightroom in the Adobe suite. So it's got all of those things that you can fine-tune your RAW images. And the wonderful thing about shooting in RAW is you have so much more adjustment and flexibility on the back end. So there's times, especially in a hurry, where you try to shoot it right in camera, but sometimes things happen. You bump things and your aperture gets adjusted, or you bump something and your white balance gets adjusted, and it's going when you're shooting in RAW, you can go into something like Darktable and fix it. The image isn't permanently messed up.
Okay, so that was the third one, and you said there was four?
Yeah, the last is GIMP. And I use GIMP for image layering. I do a lot with food. When the food that I typically get, if I'm shooting it in my home studio, it's from a company that does prepackaged foods. So the colors aren't always great because it's been cooked once, then it's been froze, and then I get the food. So in order to have the best color representation in an image, then I take and adjust the greens and adjust the reds in order to make everything look good and not together in different layers inside GIMP.
Okay. Do you get to keep the food after the photo shoot?
Yes, I do. Especially the stuff that I shoot at home. I pick up the products from the client and I bring it home and shoot it. And of course, the way I do all of my photography, I want the food to be edible when I'm done so that it can be ate. I don't want the waste of food that you've manipulated so then it's no longer safe for anybody to eat.
Okay, so it sounds like a dream job. I mean, taking a picture of food and then having to get it. That's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The hardest part about the stuff that we get that I get to take home, shoot in my home studio, like I said, it's been frozen. So if you look at it, just normally, you cook it and you plate it, you eat it, it looks fine. But when you're preserving it forever in a still image, it can be heavily scrutinized. And so that's where things like GIMP come in, to where I can really fine tune things and make things look their absolute best. Because if you're looking at it, spinach that's been cooked and frozen, reheated, it's really not appealing. It starts to turn this really ugly gray color.
So have you always used free and open source software in your job, or did you use proprietary software before?
I used proprietary software before, but that was before I moved into the professional realm. Before, I was using the Corel suite. I can't even remember what it's called. It wasn't Photoshop, but it's named something kind of like that.
So you use proprietary software before, and then you turn professional, and then you turn to open source software. I would have thought it would be the other way around.
I know, it's kind of funny the way I went at it. Well, I was using the proprietary software before I moved to Linux as my daily desktop. And when I moved to Linux, the proprietary software that I was using wasn't available on the system. And so I started looking for other options. And that's when I found the things like Rapid Photo Downloader and Darktable and GIMP. And as I was learning those programs is the time that I was transitioning from just shooting for fun into shooting for clients. And so I was able to take and build that workflow while I was also building my professional business.
And you never had a problem with those software? Yeah. I mean, other photographer would use proprietary software for that. But so you grew your business at the same time as you were growing your knowledge of the software.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that makes it easier. It's once a photographer gets a very set workflow, it's hard to move from that. And it's even harder to move from that when you have clients that have, you've got a deadline. You get this food, this product, whatever, even if it's a family shoot or a wedding that you're doing, they want those images back in a timely manner. And if you have those deadlines to meet, it's hard to experiment. So because I was learning the open source software at the same time that I was becoming a professional, that helped on that level because I wasn't trying to completely change my workflow while trying to meet the demands and keep clients happy.
Yeah, so both training and and the job at the same time. Do you think the open source software that you're using are at the same level as those proprietary ones? I just can't say this word. Those non-open source ones. do you easily manage to do what you want with them? Do you think you would be more efficient with non-open source software?
The only downside that I have right now to the software I'm using is that GIMP does not have non-destructive editing that Adobe Photoshop has. So that means if you put a gradient on and then want to change it, you can't do that in GIMP. It's set the way it is when you click OK. They are working on changing that. There's so much work on the back end right now that is going to bring non-destructive editing to GIMP, but that does mean it takes me sometimes more time to make changes to a layer. Or the biggest issue is I have more layers than I need to inside an image, because if I go to make a change on one, I want to make a duplicate before making that change, because I don't want to mess up the previous layer and not be able to do it differently if I don't like how that effect came out, especially if I've made 4 or 5 changes and then decide, I want to go back and adjust that. So then I have other pictures where I've saved one version to make it a major change, like merging all the layers together to make them one, and then do some additional fine tuning. I don't want to have to lose all of the work I've done in the additional layer, so I'll save it unmerged, then save a version of it merged. And that's the biggest advantage right now of some of the proprietary software. I can work around it, but I'm super excited for the development of the non-destructive editing in GIMP.
And did they announce a deadline for that, or is it still it's going to come one day?
It's going to come one day. They don't have an official deadline, but since GIMP 2.10, that version of GIMP really set a lot of the groundwork to get non-destructive editing in. And I can't say his name. I think he is German, but he's a developer that's doing a lot of the work on non-destructive editing. And I follow him on Patreon, and it's amazing, you know, a lot of the work that he's doing in, one, getting the CMYK color profiles added to GIMP. So what that means is it's cyan, yellow, magenta, K, I can't remember what the, but it's black. Yeah. And that is what publishers will use. That's the color profile that publishers will use. So if I want to send something to a magazine, I typically need to submit it in a CMYK color profile. And right now, the only way to change that is through proprietary software. And GIMP is getting that. So they don't have a deadline yet, but it's easy to see that they're making great progress in hitting some of those goals.
You said that, you talked about the CMJK profile. Did you ever had a real problem with a client, for example, when we would want an Illustrator file or a Photoshop document as the final product?
So most of the businesses that I work with are really small businesses. So they're wanting just the finished JPEG or PNG file. That hasn't been an issue for me. And usually you can save things in GIMP that you can open up in other programs. So you could save certain things, bring it into Inkscape and export it as an SVG. So if they had a layout that they needed for a magazine or something like that, I could bring that into Inkscape, drop the image into the layout that they needed, or make sure that the image is shot to the layout, and then be able to send that image off to whoever it needs to go in order to have that layout printed.
Okay, so no big problem there, because that's often what you know, the arguments from people who use non-open source software is that, hey, but my clients want, I don't know, Word document or anything like that, and I can't provide that. So it's cool to hear that you don't have that kind of problem. Have you ever said to yourself, okay, I'm fed up with this open source nonsense. Let's use Photoshop and I'll like everybody else, and I'll be much happier in my life.
No, not really. I mean, sometimes I'm looking for new ways to edit, getting some inspiration, and all of those are done on Adobe software. And so I have to convert that into the software that I'm using. But for the most part, I don't think I'm missing anything in the Adobe suite that is anything that I need to do my job and to create the images that I like to create.
So even if Adobe was porting the suite to Linux, you would still use open source software?
Yeah, I would still be using the same software that I'm using day in and day out. It works perfectly for what I'm using it for.
If someone would want to be a photographer was coming to you for advice, would you recommend them to use open source software?
Absolutely. One of the hardest parts about getting started, especially as a professional, is there's all of this hardware that you need, and it's not cheap. It's not cheap to buy the camera, and you typically need two cameras, one for your daily use and one for a backup. And then there's lights and stands and all of this hardware that you need in order to get your first client, that adding the expense of software on top of that is just overwhelming.
Yeah, so economical reasons too to use open source software, and since the quality of the work is kind of the same, so yeah, why spend so much money on licenses then?
Yeah, exactly. And in following my mentor, uses the Adobe suite, and a lot of the people that are kind of in that group with my mentor also use that same software. And it seems like every time there is an update for their software, you know, they're all wondering, hey, is it going to work? What's changed? Is our workflow going to change? And that's one thing I haven't had to deal with using the software that I'm using is, yeah, sometimes they change things, but it's been great adds to my software. It's not changing my fundamental workflow. And that has been a wonderful thing about using open source for my photography.
Okay. Well, I think we covered your photography job, unless you have something else to say.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers the scope of that.
So we still have another subject to cover. But first, you said you were running Linux. So what made you switch from, I guess, Windows to Linux?
So I made the switch about 3 years ago, and we had Windows 10 running on our computer, and it was absolutely driving me nuts. I'd go to start a program and programs wouldn't work because of an update happened. And I was frustrated with all of the constant problems. I couldn't sit down and use my computer because I was always trying to fix my computer. And I know that was the early days of Windows 10 and there's always issue in the adoption, but overall I was just frustrated and decided that I was going to look for an alternative. And I'm one of those people that once I get started on a subject, I just research it and research it. And eventually, in that process, I found Linux and this wonderful world of options that it opened up for me, and I never looked back.
Welcome home.
Fantastic.
You use Linux as your daily driver. You use open source software. But I also happen to know that you are also contributing to open source to an open source project. Can you tell me more about that?
I have contributed to Lubuntu, which is an awesome little project. The last 6 months, this last cycle of release, I've been so busy with work that I haven't really gotten to contribute with them, but I'm really looking forward to doing more. It's so much fun not only to be a part of helping a distribution, but seeing all the fun things that happen in the background and making stuff better that other people can then use to make their lives better.
And can you talk about your contributions, or is this a secret?
No, they're not secret. Mostly I worked with the graphic side, so helping to set up themes and icons and working out some of those details. In the previous release, where Lubuntu was moving from LXDE to LXQT, there was a lot of those graphical details that needed to be reworked out. They were making the transition. And so that's what I spent most of my time doing, is, you know, digging through the configuration files to find out what needs to be switched so we can make it look good.
Cool. And you've achieved a great job, I think, on that.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Wendy, where can people find more about your job, or maybe about your contributions to Lubuntu?
For Lubuntu, we've been making some changes. There were some issues with the server, but you can typically find that information on Launchpad, where the overall Ubuntu puts their contribution list. And then you can find out more about what I do by, you know, just chatting with me. I'm typically in the Linux groups on Telegram. So you can find me in there and ask me questions.
Okay. Well, I think we have covered everything I had planned for this evening. Thank you very much, Wendy, for joining me tonight.
Thank you. It was so much fun to talk with you.
Thank you. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Hacker Public Radio. I will be back with more interviews in the near future. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao. This episode of HPR is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial by attribution license. The sound used in the opening and closing sequence is Speaker X Clash by Daniel H., released under a Creative Commons non-commercial by attribution license and available on Jamendo.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. We'll